This episode of the Flush Podcast is brought to you by North Dakota Tourism, Federal Premium Ammunition, Onyx Hunt, Chief Upland, here on South Dakota, and by Grain Belt Premium Beer. Today, we're taking a deep dive into North Dakota's 2021 pheasant hunting forecast. Mike Jensen works for the state of North Dakota, and he is ready to reveal their updated roadside counts. We'll talk about hot spots to target this season, as well as locations that you might want to avoid due to the drought. Mike will also explain in detail North Dakota's new digital trespass laws, and I'll prod him to give up a few of his state's sleeper destinations.
The Flush. So fast, it hardly seems real. So vivid, the moment freezes in time before erupting in a blur of spurs and feathers. It's why we changed the way upland loads are built with Prairie Storm. Exclusive flight control FlexWad technology and a mix of copper-plated lead and flight stopper pellets combine to create dense, deadly shot strains through any choke. Longer shots, more power, fewer missed birds. Only from Federal.
If you're looking for a great bird hunting destination this season, then I strongly recommend that you consider one of my favorite places to hunt. That's North Dakota. North Dakota is a bird hunter's paradise. You can hunt both waterfowl and upland birds all in the same day. Ducks in the morning, pheasants, sharp-tailed grouse, and Hungarian partridge in the afternoon, or vice versa. North Dakota has a population estimate of 2.9 million breeding ducks, which is 19% above the long-term average. And their prairie pothole region is smack dab in the middle of the central flyway. Last season, pheasants, sharp-tailed grouse, and Hungarian partridge numbers rose in North Dakota. And we're about to talk to Mike Jensen to find out what those numbers are going to look like this year. I'm optimistic that this could still be one of the best bird hunting seasons we've seen in decades. North Dakota has approximately 800,000 acres of private land open to public walk-in hunting. For the latest plots guide, visit the North Dakota Game and Fish Department. Bag your limit this fall in North Dakota. Visit legendarynd.com to start planning your hunting adventure today.
The wild is calling. Answer your thirst for adventure with Grain Belt Premium Beer. Bring the Grain Belt to the outdoors with their limited edition premium hunting season pack. It's available anywhere you can find premium 12-pack cans of Grain Belt.
Welcome to another episode of the Flush Podcast. I'm Travis Frank. I'm your host. Brandon Morton, as always, is sitting next to me. He produces this program. Thank you, Brandon, for sharing your many talents with us, as always. Last week, you left me singing the show open in. I do not appreciate that, so I will never be doing that again. I'm kidding. People apparently like that, so we roll with it. Last week, Scott Franzen joined the show to invite our listeners, you, on a late season pheasant hunt with him. The spots were limited and they filled up almost instantly. So we appreciate your support of what he's calling the Hank Hunt. And who knows, if it goes well this season, maybe we'll do it again next year. So a big thank you to all of you for your continued support. Last week, I also mentioned that Pheasants Forever, along with several other national organizations, launched what they're calling the North American Grasslands Conservation Act. This is a massive group effort on their part to stand up for America's disappearing grasslands. Much like the Disappearing Wetlands Act, this mission will be crucial to our landscape for generations to come. To learn more about the National Grasslands Act, you can head to the Pheasants Forever's website or follow hashtag ActForGrasslands on social media. All right, let's get to it. My guest today is Mike Jensen. Mike works for the state of North Dakota. Mike, I know you're a busy man, so I appreciate you taking some time to share your bird hunting knowledge with us, specifically those numbers that you're holding in your hand.
Sure. Thanks for having me, Travis. Always good to talk to you.
Well, we talk a few times each year, and I'm always picking your brain about where is a place that people don't know about? What are some of the sleeper destinations? So maybe at the end of the show, we'll get into a couple of your sleeper spots or just cool places in the state. But before we do, let's break down some of the information that you now have in your hand. And that is, you know, the roadside counts, the bird counts from across the state. And then before we do that, I guess I want to let people know a little bit more about your role at the state. How long have you been working for the state of North Dakota, and where do you live?
Sure. Yeah, I'm based in Bismarck. I work for the state, and I am the outdoor promotions manager for tourism. So I usually out promoting hunting, fishing, hiking, biking, camping, all the fun stuff, everything that every outdoorsman loves to do. I've been with the state for 11 years now.
Gotcha. And what does a normal day look like in outdoor tourism for you?
Well, we're as a tourism staff, we're spread kind of thin. So, on the good parts of my day, I get to do outdoor tourism. So that's, an hour or two a day. And then we're doing other things all day long. But a typical day, we're posting to social media. We're, doing film shoots, contacting media. We're, just trying to create buzz around, hunting and fishing in North Dakota. One thing that we always have a problem with, a lot of people don't know what's up here. A lot of people don't know what we have in North Dakota. So we're just trying to create that sort of recognition that, the state's mm-hmm. a great destination for hunting and fishing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you've never experienced it, then you wouldn't know. And I talk about it all the time because that, has been my favorite hunting getaway destination basically my whole life. You also work with fish and wildlife, biologists, and specifically for this program, we're going to break down the information you received from them about the bird hunting forecast. Let's talk about waterfowl as well as upland. So you just got that information in how long ago?
Well, the upland game brood survey was released on the 9th. So we've had it in our hand. I can say just generally we've had it for about a week or so. Kind of looking through the numbers and comparing the numbers to past years and seeing where, what kind of trends are happening. Like that's really, this last week we've kind of been picking apart these numbers and looking at, why things are certain ways they are. And this, most of these numbers, most of the things I'm going to talk about today are drought driven. And that's going to be the big talker in this right now, is that we're experiencing extraordinary drought in certain areas of the state. And there's some parts of the state that are seeing, decreases in population numbers because of this. It's not a fun thing for a tourism guy to talk about, somebody who likes to show people how great things are and how everything right. is. And when you're dealing with a drought and you're dealing with, reduced habitat, extraordinary dryness, and that sort of thing kind of mm-hmm. has led to what we're seeing right now and what we're seeing. And we're, I'm honest, but I put sunshine on it, but we're down 23% statewide in our pheasant count that they did just this summer for our brood survey, the roadside counts, where they counted numbers of broods and number of birds per, and they do these counts every year. It's a number they've kept for 70 years that they do the same stretch of roads and count the birds seen per 100 miles. So we have good comparisons for a long stretch of time with this number.
So you feel that they're pretty accurate?
I do. Yes. I feel the time of year that they do them and the roads they're on. Mm-hmm. I feel like they, of course that they're going to miss some birds here or there. And I do feel like there's, there has been a trend in some areas where, you have more urban or, urban people moving to rural areas now, where that wasn't the case in the past, where you just had farmhouses and stuff. And so where we have birds that are kind of hunkering down in people's rural yards. I have it at my house. I say it because that's where I am. I live on a rural lot south of Bismarck, in the center of the state. And I have birds in my yard. And that's, we have birds back by our tree rows. And so everywhere where we're kind of creating these smaller bits of habitat for birds, you we're kind of holding them in those areas. So mm-hmm. where these roadside counts could have shifted is where, some of this, this area was just where I am at right now is just wide open prairie, and now it's, you know, now there's houses and tree rows, and you know, there's areas in my yard that I don't mow. You know, I've got a couple of acres, and I kind of leave the grass long. And
you like you like to see the birds just as much as we do, don't you?
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. Well, let's break down regions, because I think it mm-hmm. matters to talk about instead of just saying, you know, down 23% statewide. That doesn't mean the whole state is affected the same. And I do appreciate your honesty in sharing that information, because the reality is you're not the only place in bird country dealing with this. I mean, here in Minnesota, certainly South Dakota, Montana, Iowa, Kansas. I mean, we are dealing with this all over the place. So you're going to be echoing a lot of the same sentiments around the country. Next week, we're going to break down the pheasant forecast for the whole country. I've got a Pheasants Forever biologist coming up to talk about other areas, but I wanted to really focus on North Dakota because we spend so much time there and so many bird hunters head to your state every year. Besides just pheasants though, Mike, you've mm-hmm. got Hungarian partridge and sharp-tailed grouse, and they have an ability to survive in conditions that are what we've been seeing this year. Are you seeing a decline in those numbers as well as a whole, or are they stable or up?
Well, they're stable and up. And that's my one bright spot, I guess, mm-hmm. that I have been, you know, not that we're seeing huge increases. Sharp tails are up 2% and Hungarian okay. partridges are up 9% this year. But we're talking statewide, but that's on top of a, you know, last year we had a 54% increase in sharp tail, 45% mm-hmm. increase in Hungarian partridge. Year before, we saw 113% increase in sharp tail, 58, yeah. you know, so we're talking gains on top of gains on top of gains, you know, with like yep. the 2017 year is the year I'm always going to, I mean, that's kind of my black 2017 where, mm-hmm. you know, pheasants were down 59%, sharpies were down 29%, you know, like we saw mm-hmm. some decreases in 17 and 18. And you know, Hungarian partridges were down 62. So that year we just, the population took a hit. Ever since then though, we've been adding on, you know, sharptail have been up every year since then. Hungarian mm-hmm. partridge have been up every year since then. So we're seeing, you know, increases of, you know, that 2019 season where we saw 113% increase in sharptail. I mean, that was a big rebound. And then to add 54 the next year, 2% this year, not a big number, but the fact that we're holding and even mm-hmm. gaining a little bit, I mean, that's really good for that population.
Yeah. And that's kind of what I've been hearing too from hunters that have been out working dogs in the field before season. And now that your season just opened on Saturday, positive reports again mm-hmm. for grouse and Hungarian partridge. I mean, I know some landowners that have texted me saying that they can't believe how many partridge they're seeing out in the fields when they're working the field. So the decline in pheasants that you're talking about is from last year, correct?
Right.
23% right. down from last year. But being up how high they were last year, you put it into perspective. Where do you feel like you're at with the long-term average this season?
Well, long-term, I mean, we're the Southwest has traditionally been our very solid pheasant range. You know, we've mm-hmm. we always see good birds in the Southwest, and long-term, you know, we're talking, you know, the beginning of the last decade, the 2011, where we saw fantastic numbers down there. And now we've kind of fallen into a new normal where we're seeing, you know, about half the birds that we used to see down in that part of the state. But those are pretty solid. You know, we're seeing they're usually pretty good, but where we're seeing a big uptick, I think, is in the Northwest, and where, you know, that across the long-term average, Northwest hasn't been our traditional, you know, that's, people haven't been coming here to go to the northwestern part of the state. I mean, they honestly, they look at these, our real pheasant hotspots, Mott and Regent and some of those areas mm-hmm. that always have birds. And, but the Northwest, and this year, just like last year, the Northwest has the highest number of birds. that they counted in their brood surveys. So we're seeing again that northwestern part of the state is you know, has the highest numbers. Of course, they had the highest decline, but that was on top of a big increase from last year. So a lot of these areas, like the Southwest, you're going to see better numbers than we saw. I mean, a lot of people are doom and gloom right now, like, oh, it's so bad, the drought's so bad. But our numbers right now are higher than 2019, 2018, 2017, even in most of these regions. And so we're seeing, you know, we're seeing good numbers. It's just last year we had a real solid increase last year. And so, of course, we're seeing a little correction on those numbers this year. And so the Northwest is the highest population in the state. The Southwest is solid, similar numbers to what has been down there for the last 5 years. Okay. And then there's the areas that we can consider marginal pheasant range, you know, kind of our secondary range, mm-hmm. the Northeast and then the Southeast used to be a very solid part of the state. We used to always see birds down in the Southeast around mm-hmm. Ellendale, down in Dickey County. You know, that area, we saw an increase down there this year, you know, where they're down statewide. It was a very small increase, but we saw an increase down there. And then the Northeast had nowhere to go but up. I mean, we're talking 10 years ago, they rarely found a bird down in up in the Northeast. And, you know, this year, their numbers in the Northeast are growing. You know, they've been on an upward trend for a while, for the past decade. They've been seeing more and more birds. And I know, Travis, you've laughed at me in a couple of areas that I've recommended where I said, yeah, there's some areas around, yeah, you know, in
Devil's in Lake, right?
Devil's Lake in that area. Yep. Yep. And this year they had the highest pheasant count on record up in the Northeast.
Come on.
Yeah. And well, I mean, we're talking, it's a third of the birds that they count in the Northwest, and you know, yeah. it's all
relative. So their percentage increase and a percentage decrease in a different part of the state is you know, not the same number of birds. If we take,
right,
you know, if you're averaging 100 birds in this section and you go down to 95, and then you're mm-hmm. averaging 10 birds in this section and you go up to 12, that's your percentages are based on that. But yes. Yeah, this is interesting. You and I have been talking about this for a couple of years, and I don't think I've been laughing at you. I think we've been laughing together, but you were telling me how the water tables have changed in mm-hmm. the Devil's Lake region, and receding waters have attributed to more habitat on the ground, which is what's causing more pheasants to be found in the Devil's Lake. Is that still the case? I mean, obviously the drought this year, I can't imagine the water tables on Devil's Lake are still going up, are they?
No, they're not, and that's exactly the case. And I'm glad you put those numbers into perspective, because when we're talking, you know, a lot of times in the Northwest, like in 2011, their birds counted per 100 mile were 4 birds. You know, that was mm-hmm. so across 100 miles. And so when there was an increase to 12, you know, it, mm-hmm. and they would publish this number that, you know, the bird population increased by 200% up in the
it's 12 birds.
People would go nuts. And, no, that's 12 birds. You know, that's not, yeah, that's not huge. But, you know, looking at that, going from 4 birds or 6 birds per 100 mile to, you know, popping up into the 20s and nearing 30 now, it's like that's a trend to me. Like, we're starting to see that. And I believe that trend does have to do with that habitat. I mean, mm-hmm. our population is very dependent on habitat, and where you see that increase in grass, the grass that's growing in the areas of the lake that have receded, you know, Devil's Lake is down. It's not a lot, you know, 5 feet or so, but remember on Devil's Lake, every time the lake loses a foot of elevation, that's 10,000 acres of land that comes out of the water. Mm. And so when it comes to, you know, when you're talking 50,000 more acres of land that was underwater and is now kind of this grassy land up there and yeah, creating pretty good grassland habitat. I mean, because these were all mudflats, yep, that have turned into grasslands. And so that's obviously one of my sleepers. That's one of those areas. Still, you know, marginal pheasant habitat, but a really great place if you're looking at doing, kind of a all bird hunt. If you want to hunt ducks and geese and you're looking at, you know, maybe throwing in some pheasant days into a duck hunt, that area has been really great for that.
Well, and if you want to go catch a few walleyes as well, the ultimate cast and blast place. One of the most popular hunts that I've ever done was on Lake Sakakawea, on that Army Corps land around the lake. We fished walleyes and sleeper alert, tons of smallmouth bass out there. My goodness. Yes. We had to, like, we couldn't keep the bass off while we're trying to catch walleyes. And, but then you pull right up on shore and you've got that land there that you can walk that's open to the public for, you know, for the most part. Most of that land is, you know, so that cast and blast adventure is what has always drawn me to North Dakota. Now, I shouldn't say always cast and blast, being fishing part of it, but the ability to hunt upland birds and waterfowl in the same day. What about the waterfowl conditions? Are you feeling like they've taken a hit as well because of the drought? Or is it just one of them things where if you find the water, man, get ready because you are going to find a mecca of birds?
Sure. And I feel that, like, the drought has hit that a little harder than even than the pheasants. Because our water index is down like 90% from where it's normally at. And so we're just a lot. As you drive through the state, you see a lot of dried up potholes, and you see a lot of areas that are, you know, not holding water like they normally are. So it's going to be a different kind of hunt this year. You know, we're used to having local birds. Like, we're used to having a lot of birds that are just stay here year round, like not necessarily year round, but all summer leading up to the season. And then, you know, and then we end up having a population that stays pretty late into our duck season. So I think this year it's going to be more of that flight type of thing where people are going to be watching. It feels to me a lot like spring snow goose, maybe, where, everybody's going to watch and see, okay, when's the big flight going to come through, and they're going to be following those migration patterns and figuring out when the birds are coming through, rather than I can just go anytime and duck hunting's going to be fantastic. It's, you know, there's the duck hunting's going to be great, but it's, you know, it's going to be better when we have a major flight, you know, a major migration of ducks coming through.
Well, I think it's always the case, if I'm being honest. It's always the case. You want to, as a waterfowl hunter, you always want to hit that migration. But I've told people this ever since I started hunting out there. Next to going up into Canada, you know, I think North Dakota offers the best duck hunting in the lower 48 in America. And I just feel like even if the migration isn't full on, the amount of birds that you guys have there anyway, it's all like, if it's down a little bit, it's still better than anything that I get to experience in Minnesota 99% of the time. And I'm just being honest because of what the habitat here holds and how many birds. Are you feeling like Canada is holding more of the birds this year? Did they get more moisture up there?
I don't. I feel like the drought has extended, you know. Where you find moisture is south of us, not north of us. And those areas, you know, there's spots. And I'm even surprised going across the state, the places where some crops are doing very well and some crops are horrible. And there's parts of the state, like in the west, where I thought it was going to be dry. You know, it's a more arid part of the state in North Dakota. As you go to the west, you find, you know, there's just less moisture out that way. But they have pretty decent looking crops out there right now. I was just out that way earlier this week. I was out on Sunday and really surprised to see how, you know, good standing corn, good, you know, there's a lot of crops there. Where in the center of the state and maybe, you know, northwest, I would say there's a kind of a box between Bismarck, Minot, Devil's Lake, and Jamestown, kind of that area where that's the hardest hit by the drought. And that's where we're seeing people, you know, a lot of, you know, corn that didn't even tassel this year, and farmers that were cutting their corn back in, back in July just to feed to their livestock.
Dang. I was going to say that I was out, you know, I drove through your state, first week of September, and I was pleasantly surprised at how green everything was. Has it, the rains that came through in August really changed the look of the landscape? To my eye, it looked way better than what I was anticipating. I thought it was going to be extremely brown, extremely arid looking, and I didn't see that.
Yeah.
Am I wrong in seeing what I saw?
You're right on with what you saw, and it's kind of surprising. There's things. I mean, yeah, you think when July was as dry as it was and everything browned up, like we had a lot of brown in July, you know, it looked like a typical end of September into October when we're seeing, we had golden fields in July that we're normally not used to seeing this year. And then we had those, there was just a series of rains that came through and just had a green up that really changed the look of the landscape. And I agree with what you said there. It looks like there's more moisture than there is. I mean, it wasn't not really enough to fill up potholes and but enough to at least green up the landscape and improve the habitat a little bit.
Mm-hmm. That's the one thing that I think is important, is that, you know, the birds that are there now, the thing that I'm most worried about is if we get a nasty winter, the habitat isn't thick enough, isn't going to give them the things they need to survive a really tough winter. Do you echo that?
I do. That, I mean, I am worried about, you know, if there's a lot of haying done on, you know, on CRP or on, you know, lands, like even plots, lands and things, you know, if they're doing some emergency, you know, haying on some of those, and there's some parts of the state that's happening.
Yep.
That's the habitat that I'm worried about, because that's the stuff that we can normally rely on. And if that's cut, you know, down to stubble and there's no cover there, yeah, it's tough. But I'm really encouraged with what I'm seeing, you know, especially out west, certain areas of the southeast, and there's some areas that really, I mean, they got rains at just the right times, and we're seeing some pretty good, you know, some pretty good grass and some pretty good habitat. And, you know, especially in a lot of, you know, and we've had initiatives now too with, you know, tree planting and the Outdoor Heritage Fund that we have in the state. That's a fund that comes from oil extraction taxes, and they've been using that to plant a lot of trees and tree rows and trying to improve habitat with that. And so we have a lot of that, those things that are going for us, where they're putting a lot of, you know, most of that Outdoor Heritage Fund is going into habitat projects. And so that's the kind of thing where, you know, we're going to see positive returns on that in the next couple of years.
How do you explain the increases in the Hungarian partridge numbers in your state? I think if I could only hunt one bird for the rest of my life, it probably would be Huns, because they just, everything about them. It's like the covey explosion of quail, but it's a bigger bird. They're delicious to eat. I mean, everything about them, they live in beautiful places. Do you have a theory as to why your partridge numbers have risen so much lately?
I feel that there are some of those. The areas that we find partridge more often are not in an area that you have seen dramatic changes in land usage, and where there's a lot of modern farming practices that have changed land usage, and there's areas of the state that I can say were very much changed by that, and that the primary range for Huns in our state is not that area. You know, that the area where we see more of the Hungarian partridge is kind of, there's livestock area. And I got to say, some of those landowners that I've talked to and we've been out, especially the livestock guys, are, you know, they're putting their fields into a three crop, a three grass rotation to make sure that, you know, and they're doing all sort, you know, different kinds of grazing and making sure that they're keeping the land healthy. And that's, I'm seeing that more and more, where they're increasing the, you know, pretty much the carrying capacity of their land, just because of the way that they're farming it, they're ranching it. There's a couple of people that are on, you know, are on some national boards out there who are showing, you know, what improvements they've done to their land just by doing some, you know, some smarter farming practices, and their cattle are healthier, their land is healthier. They're able to, you know, it floods less in their area because their ground can actually hold more water than, you know, than a field that's tilled every other year or is, you know, just grazed relentlessly and not in, you know, the way that some of the guys are doing it. So there's a right way to do it. And I'm, you know, my hat's off to those guys that are out there doing those things, putting the tree rows in the right place, putting the, you know, the different types of grasses that they're putting in and the different crops that they're planting, you know, in the right rotation to kind of make the soil healthier and hold more water. And, you know, that is, to me, seems like one of those things where they're improving on habitat. Are these areas that I'm seeing these better populations, especially of Hungarian partridge and sharptail? Sharptail, I think that one, to me, the increases in that one are same deal. Their main range is an area that is unaffected by agriculture. And so you know, in that area, it's those birds just kind of, they've gone back and forth with kind of the weather trends that we've had have been more, you know, whether there's a, you know, a big blizzard that wipes them out or some, you know, a good year where we have, you know, the right amount of moisture where we see population increase. And it's one of those things that they're up, both are kind of hardier birds that can handle the drought. You know, the people used to come to North Dakota to hunt sharptail only. That was kind of the, you know, years ago, I'm told by the old guys, I guess, that, yep. You know, there was a time where no one came to North Dakota to pheasant hunt. They always would come here and everybody would be after sharptail. And that was the main game bird that we had in the state. And, because it was, I mean, it's a native bird and it's very well adapted to our climate, where, you know, the pheasants, our first pheasant season was held in 1934. And, you know, and we've had the ups and downs with that where, you know, where we've been learning about the population and, you know, what certain programs did. You know, they ended the soil bank program in the 1960s and they had to close our season in 66 because there were no birds left after they cut off the soil bank program through the Department of Agriculture. And then, I mean, so there's a lot of those things, you know, where we went, I mean, we had a 2 million bird harvest in 1945 and that dropped down to 45,000 pheasants in 1970. So just over a short period of time, you saw a real decline in the bird population. And then I feel like we've been building it back ever since then. We've been kind of getting those birds since the 1970s, 80s. Mm-hmm. And then I feel like we hit our, you know, we hit our stride early in the past decade. 2011, 2012 is where we saw our peak harvest.
What was that number?
But that number is about, it's about 700,000 birds in 2011.
Okay. Pheasants?
Pheasants. Yeah. Pheasants alone. Yeah. And that's
so 2 million was the peak and then
2.45 million birds.
Wow.
In 1944. Yeah.
Wow. That is insane. Well, that just shows, you know, how fast their populations can just explode.
Exactly. When they first introduced birds to the state and we had our first season in 34, I mean that, and then from there, you know, 1934, they harvested 200,000 birds. And a decade later, they're harvesting 2.4 million birds. And wow. Just, I mean, it is that thing, how that population can build with, you know, if they have the right habitat and the, you know, the, and back then, I guess the pressure was low other than the fact that the season was pretty unlimited. That 2.45 million was, you know, the number of hunters was ridiculous that got that number. So guys, I mean, I'm sure the limits on those birds
non-existent. That would be like you and I hauling a trailer behind us when we're walking in the field and just filling it. I mean,
exactly.
I can't imagine there was more hunters then than we've had the last couple of years, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I looking at those numbers, it's interesting to see just how, you know, how few hunters would have, you know, harvested that many birds back then, because it was, there were less less hunters than we have now with that limit.
And what was the harvest last year? Do you have those numbers?
I do. Yeah. 2020 harvest was about 330,000 birds.
Okay. How do you feel about that number based on, you know, where do you want it to be? Like, where do you feel is an ideal number for your state?
Yeah, I feel like we're capable of 500,000. That's kind of my, I'm always thinking that that's where we should be, is about a 500,000 birds. When we're lower than that, I feel like it's, you know, we had a long talk in that 2019 season, and that was our low point, was that we had about 250,000 birds harvested in 2019. And that had more to do with water and wetness. And so it's kind of weird. From 2019 to 2021, we have the opposite problem. We had too much water in 2019, so much water in the fall that year that we couldn't get tractors and combines into the fields because they crops were sinking down into the field. So yeah, that was the year we had those crops that stayed all year long. Like where I remember in March driving across the state and looking, and there's still standing corn in the fields in you know, February and March, because no one was able to get out into the field to harvest those. And so just getting accessing those birds that year, because no crops were taken off, it was harder to get the birds. I feel like that led to the increase of last year, that 38% increase we saw last year. And then of course that was exciting, so it upped our number of hunters by 7,000 hunters, and you know, they took more birds, and so we're seeing a little, you know, a little correction this year.
Got it. Well, I want to get into another very important topic with you, and that is the new digital trespass law that has gone into effect for this season. But first, I have a quick message from our sponsors. Besides a bird dog, a shotgun, and a good pair of boots, the Onyx Hunt app is one of the most valuable hunting tools that I take into the field every single day. I've been talking about the Onyx Hunt app since we started producing this podcast, and that's simply because I use it on every hunt. Their app tells me everything that I need to know about the lands that I want to hunt and the lands that we can all legally hunt together. If you've used it yourself, then you know that the Onyx Hunt app shows your location on planet Earth and clearly lays out the land boundaries. It also tells you information about the type of property that you're on, like state land or the block management lands that we hunted last week in Montana. It's ideal for scouting before the hunt and during a hunt to help put together patterns. The app also has new features this year that show you the kind of crops that are in fields, which obviously is a big deal for us upland bird hunters. If you hunt grouse in the Northwoods, there's a timber cut layer to help you find ideal habitat. If you're planning to hunt North Dakota this year like me, then there's a very important layer that has just been added to the app. For the first time, landowners in North Dakota can post their property electronically. Onyx has you covered to make sure you don't cross the line on property that has been posted electronically. Onyx maps can be used in areas without cell coverage too. From the palm of your hand, Onyx maps always help you to know where you stand. For generations, bird hunters have hit the fields carrying some form of a vest or game pouch on their backs. Sometimes the vests rip, tear, and fall apart. Other times they're downright uncomfortable. That's why Chief Upland designed a vest that's durable, comfortable, and fits your needs. Their new Upland vest is fully customizable to fit the size and shape of all hunters. Plus, you can decide where you want to attach your shell pouches and accessories. Birds can be front-loaded into the game pouch and they fit nicely in the back without sagging. That's a big deal because the weight disbursement on your back and shoulders won't tire you out even with a full pouch of birds. The vest itself is extremely lightweight, weighing only 2.56 pounds. The material is built out of Cordura fabric, which is the same waterproof fabric used in tactical military gear. You can confidently hunt with a Chief Upland vest in some of the world's toughest environments. Order your Chief Upland vest now to make sure that you're ready for opening day. Push further and hunt longer with a game-changing vest from Chief Upland, built for your pursuit.
Hey, Upland hunters. If you're looking for a place to chase roosters this fall, you need to check out Huron, South Dakota. Here's why. The access to public hunting land is awesome. They have plenty of pet-friendly hotels for the hardest-working member of your hunting group. In addition, Huron is hosting a couple great events this hunting season, the first weekend of November. The Ringneck Festival, a six-man competitive hunt, which draws hunters from all over the country, and the Bird Dog Challenge. It's the opportunity you and your dog have been waiting for, complete with food, prizes, camaraderie, and so much more. The South Dakota pheasant season opens October 16th, so plan your hunting trip to Huron, South Dakota today. Check out the website and learn more at huronsd.com.
Okay, Mike. So a big change on the landscape and a big, very important topic for us to cover. For anybody that hunts in North Dakota, there's a new law in effect this year that involves the way that landowners can post their property. And we as hunters need to know all the information on it. So can you break it down for me, please?
Yeah, absolutely. So the big change this year, a question I'm always asked everywhere I go from hunters is it still the case where if it's not posted, it's open to walk-in hunting? Like and it's been that way for decades. Like our trespass law has been, yes, if there's no sign, it's open to public walk-in hunting. Well, for the past, and I think it's been at least 15 years or so, there's been a bill in the legislature every year to try and flip that and try to make all land that's, you know, no matter what, there it's assumed posted. And for us, that, you know, that's not really the North Dakota way. We've always had, you know, if it's not posted, you're welcome to come and walk and hunt it. And for years that bill went down because of that, because we, you know, there is a hunting culture here. There's a, you know, there's people that love to get out and hunt all the time. So there was also these legitimate concerns from people who own land, who just wanted to know who's out on their land, or, you know, we're worried about, you know, there were certain aspects of the trespass that gave them concerns. And so this year's Senate Bill 2144 came out in the legislature, and this was kind of a compromise bill. This was, you know, they met in the interim in between our legislative sessions, and they said, okay, we've been fighting about this for the last couple decades, and how do we get something fixed here? How do we get, and so it was a compromise bill where they've been studying electronic posting for a while in the state, where we've had some study, where we've had four counties that were approved in the last legislature to do a study on, you know, whether they can do an electronic posting system and how that works. Well, you know, the data that came back from that study was fairly positive. They were able to, you know, get that up and running, and so they went through, and 2144, that bill that came out, it did change our trespass law, and it didn't flip it to everything's, you know, everything's closed. It's just that land can either be electronically posted, it can be posted by signs the same old way that people have always done it, or any land that is fenced. So anything that can hold cattle, that was their definition of fenced. If it can hold cattle, it's fenced. So any fenced land is posted. Any land with signs, like the old signs with the, you know, with the name on it, is posted. And then there's electronic posting as well. The electronic posting is really the thing that we're trying to get people to understand, because that's a case where it's, you know, it's not like it used to be. If you don't see a sign, it doesn't necessarily, you know, it still could be posted.
It might still be posted.
Yeah, it could be posted electronically. And we want people to know, you know, to check on the, you know, the plots guide is a good resource for that, because this year in the you know, especially in the electronic version of the plots guide, you can see all of the posted lands, you know, electronic posted lands is in there, in addition to all of our wildlife management areas, plots, everything that's open to public hunting is in that book, as well as everything that's electronically posted. So that's been good. But I mean, I'm really trying to send people to, you know, there's third party apps like Onyx, who makes you know, great hunting maps that, I mean, they had those maps integrated into their system right away, like immediately. And they, so all that
I'm
electronic
so
posting.
I'm so glad that worked out. Cause as soon as we were talking about this, I don't know, how long ago did we start talking about this, Mike? Maybe almost a year ago?
It was after the legislature wrapped up. I mean, we knew this was in the hopper, but I think we really got serious about it in, you know, after this law was passed, probably back in March or so, where we knew we had to make people understand that, you know, last thing I want is for somebody to come out here and get a misdemeanor trespass charge because they didn't see a sign, you know? And, and so we want people to know, okay, here's the right way to do it. And, you know, if I come out there and I just, you know, I look in the, on the, you know, either on my Onyx map or on my, you know, on the North Dakota GIS website, we have, you know, geographic information website that has all those maps on it as well. Mm-hmm. You know, you can go to the Game and Fish website and they've actually put together some pretty good, you know, question and answer type page. How do I look for posted land, or, you know, what are some resources that they have? So that, and that, I mean, it has, you know, it's not posted if, and it, you know, so they have some really good things on that website right now that will really, you know, clarify what's, you know, what's posted, what's not posted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's, I just pulled up my Onyx app right now. I'm looking at it, you know, and you have an option to turn on the layers in your state. And there's 8 layers available in North Dakota. And the one you're looking for specifically says ND electronically posted land.
Yes.
And at first I thought, I don't think many people are going to do it, will they? And then when we were driving through the state last week, I opened it up. I was like, I just want to see. I am amazed at how many of the properties are posted. Now, it could be when you get there, they also have signs. So these might have been properties that have been posted for years anyway. I don't know for sure, but it is extremely, extremely important to have this now because of the amount of properties in the state that are posted electronically. There's a lot of red. There's a lot of red. And I still go back to, as a bird hunter, and I still go back to that's normal for me everywhere else I hunt around the country. So it's not like, oh, I'm done going to North Dakota. Everything is posted. That's not necessarily the case. You might have a landowner that has 20,000 acres of land and he just doesn't have the ability to maintain those signs, keep up on them. They're busy. They've got a lot of other things. And they might also be the kind of person that goes out deer hunting with their family around Thanksgiving, but they don't bird hunt, or they may pheasant hunt once a year, but they don't duck hunt. And so this app basically gives you the information that you need to know to go up and knock on their door. And I've had, I don't know if it's 75% success rate, but it's close to that for people saying, you know what? Yeah, go ahead. And I can say, I can see on this map, this is where your land boundaries are. And I just want you to know that I won't go beyond that. Because in the past, they would want to take me out for a drive and say, like, here's where my land ends. And now I have all that information right there, too. So I just think that it's important to know, as always, wherever we're hunting, to respect people's property. This gives us a, you know, information right at our fingertips right there. I'm extremely happy that you guys were able to work with Onyx on that to get the land onto that app too, because it just makes it so convenient to have that information. But again, where did you say was the other place that people can go?
Well, they can, I'd say go to gf.nd.gov. Okay. That's our Game and Fish's website. And there's a page on there called Where to Hunt. And if you go on that, they have a land access basics is what it's called. And it's actually pretty easy. It has a thing that says can hunt without permission and land that's not physically or electronically posted, private lands open to sportsmen or to recover game without a firearm. Like you can go on to posted land to recover game without a firearm. So that makes it really clear. Okay, here are the three instances where I can hunt without permission. And then, you know, there are places you can only hunt with permission within 440 yards of an occupied dwelling, land that's posted physically or electronically, rights of way and section lines, and then unharvested crops. Those are, you know, those are kind of the land trespass basics in the state where, you know, where they always, you know, even if land is not posted, that's always been a, you know, in the past when we would tell, oh, everything that's not posted is open. And there was always, you know, there, even then there were some stipulations, unless there's unharvested crops, then, you know, like we would, have to, you know, there was always that stipulation. But I do think that, you know, looking through that list, yeah, I looked at that map and I saw a lot of red myself. But when I went out, it's a lot of the areas where I would see signs before. And I feel like there's a lot of people that this was just an easier route. And that was kind of the landowner's argument against, you know, this takes so much time, you know, especially those people with a lot of acreage. It took a lot of time for them to go out and post those lands, and they, you know, it was difficult maintaining. It was a large expense. So now if they can do it electronically, a lot are doing it that way. I still, you know, there's still signs out there that, you know, a lot of people are even planning on posting signs anyway this year. But I do feel like it's just important that people know that, you know, they, even if there's not a sign, it might be posted. And that's been the word I'm trying to get out there. There's not a sign, and it might be posted.
We've talked about it for the last couple of weeks. We've also mentioned that if it's not posted at this point of time, it will not be posted electronically for the rest of the season, because they've missed the window to post it electronically. So you don't have to worry about showing up at a place that you found birds out in a field on a Tuesday night and you intend to hunt there again on Wednesday. There could be a sign, a physical sign in the ground that says no hunting, but they cannot post it electronically at this time if it's not already posted, correct?
No, there's a sign up period that has a deadline, and each year there will be that, you know, there's a deadline in July for them to sign up to electronically post their land. And so each year when they go to post, Game and Fish was all over the place this year. You know, make sure you get out and post. And, you know, there were a couple people that were kind of late to that party who will be out putting up signs because they didn't know that they had to have that in, that they couldn't post at any time, you know, where, you know, if you post with a physical sign, you can post at any time. If you're posting electronically, you got to make that deadline. And so, yeah, you're not going to be surprised by a out of nowhere posting.
Got it. One of my favorite conversations I get to have every year with people is the one that I get to have with you, is where should I hunt this year, Mike? What are some of your cool hunting opportunities that people don't know about? One of them that I still haven't done is your rough grouse.
Yes. Yep.
This is kind of an underutilized, would you say, or people don't even know it exists, but rough grouse hunting in North Dakota? Mm-hmm.
I would say underutilized for sure. And, you know, that area where we see most of the grouse hunting is kind of the most picturesque part of the state too, where we see a lot of rough grouse. And so that the North Dakota Badlands is really good, has always been really good grouse hunting. And we're seeing, you know,
sharptails though, right?
Yeah. Sharptails. You know, good sharptail out there. And then, you know, where we're seeing, you know, the southern part of that area, the southern Badlands is really where we see more of that rough grouse.
Really? Do anybody hunt for them out there?
Not a lot. No, not. I mean, that area is kind of, it's close to our primary pheasant range, I guess. And so most people in that area are hunting pheasant down in that area.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any reports about your rough grouse numbers there this year?
That's not part of the regular roadside survey that, you know, and so, yeah, we're seeing, you know, we don't get a lot of data on those.
Would you do me a favor and drive down there and take a walk? Tell me how many rough grouse. Oh, what about the Turtle Mountain area? Because there's rough grouse there too, right?
There is. Yeah, absolutely. Yep. And that's, you know, that range. I mean, exactly. I like that area more. And it's kind of funny because there's some terrain that's up in the Turtle Mountains, you know, especially on the edges of the Turtle Mountains, but that you see that's similar to some of those butte areas of the far southwest North Dakota that I'm talking about. But yeah, there are up in that area. But there are areas that are, you know, are open that you have to to look into, is, but you know, Bottineau County, Rolette County, some of those areas, Cavalier, Pembina, those are the areas that where we're, you know, where we see, you know, the most rough grouse hunting, and that are open to that. And the Pembina County area, like one of my favorite areas up there is the Pembina Gorge. And okay. That's another one of these, like when I said the most scenic parts of the state, I'm really talking about the Pembina Gorge and the Turtle Mountains. And those two areas, the gorge and the mountains, that's kind of a sneaky, rough grouse territory, and where you end up seeing a lot in those two areas. And, especially Cavalier, Pembina County, that I know there's a lot up in that area. I've talked to a lot of people that hunt up in that area. So it's a nice area for that.
What about well, we kind of gave up a little bit of that Devil's Lake pheasant numbers on the rise. What other parts of your state do you feel like people don't know about that they might want to look into?
Well, the one, and I feel like this is, I mean, I'm kind of a broken record about it, but the Crosby area in Divide County, that one is an area that, you know, when I talk to your average Minnesota or Wisconsin pheasant hunter, it's just a little too far. And I said, like, that's kind of funny to me that, you know, that I'm like, there's really good birds up there. Is there anything a little bit closer? Cause that's the other corner of the state. And I feel like that hesitancy has led to some low pressure in that area, and agreed, that we end up seeing a lot of birds up in there, and that population has just been growing each year. And so that area to me is kind of one of those sneaky good, but it's a drive. It's a haul for anybody from Minnesota, Wisconsin, who, you know, those are our two, number one and number two pheasant markets for non-residents as Minnesota and Wisconsin. And for those hunters to go all the way, you know, once they get to the state, you're talking another, you know, it's a way to get across. It's, you know, good. It's a good 6.5-7 hours to get
my
Fargo
my pup,
up to there.
My pup, if you've heard this noise of what sounds like a dog chewing on a bone this whole episode, that's because that's my dog literally chewing on a bone sitting next to me. And she is from the northwest corner of the state. So for me to get up there where my buddy lives, it's about a 9.5 hour drive.
Right.
And it's a commitment. If you're going to go both ends, it's a long drive. But what I tell people about, you know, making that drive to that region, that western part of the state, is that, you know, if you go hunting, a lot of people go into western Minnesota or, you know, eastern North Dakota, South Dakota, those areas, and you love pheasant hunting, you get that in the western part of the state. But then when a dog goes on point, you also have the ability or the opportunity to watch a covey of huns explode or a covey of sharp-tailed grouse explode. So that extra few hours of drive is so worth it. So worth it. Daisy's over there agreeing with me. Yeah.
She totally agrees. Yep.
She totally agrees. And you know, after camping out in the Badlands last year, I just don't understand why that isn't on everybody's list at least one time to do it, because it is some of the most beautiful bird country in North America. It's just spectacular. And we didn't see another hunter out there. And I just don't understand it. I don't get it. It was incredible. And they're there. The birds are there. The wildlife, the views. It's stunning, stunning place to hunt. And you're telling us, you just got done telling us that those numbers are strong again this year. So if I'm on the fence about an area that maybe doesn't have the highest counts that I'm getting from any state in the Midwest, consider that an opportunity for you to take a hunt out in the Badlands or in the western part of the state or any of the areas that you just told us about, Mike.
Right. And especially, I'll send people northwest just because I really think like they're sitting on better numbers than, you know, than I would say six of the past 10, you know, maybe there were 3 years that had better numbers than this year. up in that part of the state. And so when you compare like the last decade, their, you know, their numbers are strong, and they've been on an upward trajectory for a while. And those other areas of the state, I really liked sending people southeast for a long time, because that is an easier hunt for people coming from the east. And southeast has been good. I've seen, you know, there's always the anecdotal part of it too, where, you know, I talk to landowners and I talk to people in different areas, and there's some areas of the state where they say bird numbers are down, but I've got farmers in that area that are saying, not on my ranch, not on my farm, you know, so, you know, some of those areas are seeing really good numbers. Like I said, the southeast saw, you know, almost held even. I think it's maybe a 1% increase in that area. So it's, I mean, they almost added nothing on, but the point there is they didn't lose any. And so it's going to be similar hunting to what it has been. You know, if anybody hunts down in the southeast, you're going to see similar birds to what you've seen in the last couple of years. And then there's that weird northeast phenomenon where I've been seeing that population increase. I mean, we're talking in the, you know, like I said, it's all relative from four birds up to, you know, but it's, you know, hundreds of percent increase that we've seen in the last decade up in that area. And that's good for that area. And I think, you know, just that we have pheasants statewide. I do say that to everyone. I'd say, you know, we have pheasants statewide. There's some areas that there are pockets of birds that are better in here. You know, I'll point out on a map a bunch of different places that people could go and check out. And, you know, sometimes the other things are what dictate what they want to do. If they're looking for Hungarian partridge, or they're looking for sharptail, the question, it narrows that a little bit. And I do think that's been the fun thing about sending more people up north, along that north border, is that they get into some of the other upland species and seeing, you know, those guys, you know, some people coming back, and I saw more Hungarian partridge than I've ever seen anywhere. Like, I've never seen that many Hungarian partridge, and especially, you know, north of Minot, there's a couple of areas where people just don't think of pheasant hunting. And those are some areas that are holding some really good birds right now.
Well, you've done a good job of explaining. Hopefully it's helped a lot of people. If there are still more questions that somebody listening right now has, and they want to look at a map specifically to see that information, where can you send them?
So I will send them to ndtourism.com. Like, that's our, that would be our the website that, and if you go to that, I guess, like, one of the things that I usually do is I'll just type in pheasant hunting North Dakota. And if you type that into Google or whatever, into a search engine, our pheasant hunting page will be one of the top four or so, you know, so you can look for North Dakota tourism pheasant hunting. You get onto our pheasant hunting landing page is what we call it. And that's where all of the different, we have our pheasant hunting hotspots. So it's a best places that shows, you know, the five best places to hunt pheasants in the state. You can look at, we have all the different lodges are listed there, the plots guides on there, the, you know, bag limits, just kind of regulation highlights. If you want more specific information on the do's and don'ts of pheasant hunting, that Game and Fish website's the best place to go for that, because they're, you know, they have all the rules, and they establish all that. But ours is, if you go to the tourism website, you're going to find more of the, you know, here's the best places to hunt. Here's, you know, where you can stay, where you can eat, where you can, you know, those type of things. Mm-hmm. And we have those on our tourism website.
Perfect. Mike, appreciate you taking the time. I'm looking forward to getting back out to North Dakota. I'm excited. Every time I hear another sleeper spot from you, it gives me something to chew on, to think, oh man, I really do need to get up into those Turtle Mountains like you've been telling me for the last couple of years. So who knows, maybe we'll see that on a TV show next season. And speaking of that, you can watch our shows airing right now on the Outdoor Channel from now through the end of December. We'll be back next week with another forecast breaking down bird numbers that are coming in all over the country. Hope you'll join us then. Thank you for joining us today. I'm Travis Frank, reminding you to take the time to introduce someone new to the field.